Okay, everyone, welcome to the Lady Comic Book History Podcast. As a part of Temple of Geek, I'm here with Maria, and we are going to talk about the women of Avatar. Avatar the Last Airbender, the good Avatar, not the blue people Avatar. It's funny because that's always a thing that happens when I say I'm a fan of Avatar, then people always have to like pause and they're like, which one? I'm like, the good one, don't even with me.
I don't even acknowledge the other one, so
it doesn't exist. Okay, So the first thing I wanted to talk about was just in Avatar: The Last Airbender is one of the projects I often cite as like a perfect piece of media. Every show has its flaws. Very few things can be given a true 10 out of 10. It's perfect 100% across the board. But Avatar: The Last Airbender is one of the things that is as close as it gets. And I think that's shown through those of us who grew up with it and are still able to watch it as adults. Those of you who just now watched it as adults and are still huge fans of it. It's for kids as much as it's for adults, and that's something that's really hard to balance. But the thing I have always loved most about it is the female characters and the way they're written in the cartoon. Katara is the one I have always connected with the most. So let's start with, who is the one you latched on to the most?
Katara is literally all of us, in a way. I will admit that, like, Katara was one of those characters I loved her, and then, went down, which we'll talk about why. It has to do with the ships. It's very much not Katara's thing. It's very much, like, how people ship her. But Katara is one of those characters, yeah. And there's no way a woman does not see herself in that character. Because just the way that she's right. So honest and real, her anger, her, like, just also the product of circumstance of her needing to be the mother, the one that has to be the most responsible. But at the same time, she's silly and goofy and is down for a good bit. So she is literally all of us. And I think it's just so natural to see yourself in her. And that's, I think, why I got frustrated with her at times. Because I'm just like, oh, Katara, like, you don't have to be their mother. Yeah. Oh, you don't have to be with a boy. Just don't do it. Be your own person. But she, Katara is just such a well-done character. And I especially love the fact that she's such a master bender, and her journey with bending. It's not just her trauma. It's also just like what she ends up accomplishing aside from everything. One thing I really love about Avatar is that they have the foundation first and then they get into the backstory. And I think that's what adds to why it's such a masterpiece, because it does such a great job of exposition and showing us the story, having you connect with these characters and then explaining them, sort of. And Katara is a masterclass of that. Even better than Aang, I would say. They do that with her so well.
Yeah, I agree. I, as someone who was parentified too early in her life, that was probably the main connection I had with Katara. And that is the first thing that pissed me off about the live action, was making Sokka the mature one immediately betrays both of their characters. And
don't get me started with the live action Katara. It's just such a disservice.
Well, and then that final big moment, that what was supposed to be a big moment when she's fighting Master Paku to be able to be trained, there was just no emotion tied to it at all. From her or Sokka, like that was just completely gutted. It was very hollow because she wasn't angry. The animated version, she fights with frustration and anger, and everything she'd been holding in their whole journey up to that point just gets unleashed. And I literally cry every time I watch that scene because I can feel her anger and her frustration. And that just wasn't there in the live action. And that's why it just made me so mad.
At all. They didn't, like, they stripped her of her anger the whole time. I don't know. I have a lot of feelings with the Netflix adaptations. But I always feel they made it, like, too good. They made it, like, they didn't want any controversy. So they stripped the sexism with Sokka. But then they stripped Katara's anger. And it's almost as if they didn't get why that was so beneficial to her as a woman. They were just, oh, angry woman, bad. And it's like, no, it's nuance. It's layers. It's realistic of a child who lost her both parents during, a genocide. Like, of course she's angry. I think the actress that plays Katara is actually really sassy and angry. So I'm just like, she's cast very well. But it's like, well, then why did they write her without those very angry tones and moments? And so she was very capable of it. And she has that sass. You can see it in our audition tape. So it's like, she was capable of that level of character. So
it was very much the writing and the direction, because the first episode was so terrible from all the performances. Every single actor sucked in the first episode because the direction was very wooden. They're like, no, less emotion. I'm like, these are children. They have the most emotions. And the reason I know it was the direction is because immediately in the second episode, it felt like a hard switch. I was like, oh my God, you're letting them act. Crazy. Yeah. You're letting the people you hired do their jobs. Insane. Mm-hmm. So you can tell when it's the direction going, no, smaller. And when they just let them do their jobs, because it's such a drastic difference. And so I know everyone was casted very well, besides Sokka. And the writing and the direction just didn't allow them to have the full character moments that they were supposed to have. As far as stripping Sokka's sexism goes, I think the problem with the live action can be boiled down to, they clearly watched the source material, but they didn't understand why certain things were the way they were.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't bother understanding, this is why this is placed here. So when they took things from book 2 and book 3 and put them in this first season, I'm like, you just effed up so much character stuff. Like, this is... And now that season 2 and 3 have been announced, I'm like, what are you going to do? You just took 4 episodes worth of material and just shot yourself in the foot.
And, oh my gosh, I don't want to go on for like a rant for the live action, but the thing is, like, they made these hour-long episodes, and I know season 1 is 22 episodes, but it's like, okay, but you have 16 hours worth of, like,
There was only a 2-hour difference
time
between.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And yet, so they had enough time to add so much of season 1, and yet then they added season 2 and 3 into it. And it's like, but why'd you do that? There was so much of season 1 that's what the beauty of the story is like that build, that's character development. It's Aang learning to waterbend in season 1.
At all in the first season of the live action? No waterbending happened from Aang. We're like,
What? Water at all. What is season 2 going to be? He's going to have to learn so much in a very quick time.
The reason it concerns me that they took away Katara's anger and all of these really important moments is because when we get to Toph, who is arguably one of the best women written in TV history, for so many reasons, and we're going to get into it. My favorite she is a strong woman, but if you look at, and we know Avatar is a bunch of different Asian cultures pulled into each other, but the pressures of being a young woman in the society and in the specific family that she grew up in, for her to not only go against that and be like this underground WrestleMania earthbending badass, but also soften enough to open herself up to friendships and to being a teacher, and also maintains her femininity. Like, that is a crazy amount of stuff to have accomplished in a child's freaking cartoon, and it has yet to be matched by anybody in any character ever.
And considering when Avatar The Last Airbender was written, like, it is just like a standard that, like, it can be done, and it doesn't matter, like, what time it is. It doesn't matter if it's woke. Like, it's just trying and caring. And also, like, the disability representation, like, hands down, one of the best disability representations we've ever seen. And I just, like, when people are like, oh, Korra's woke, and it's like, Toph is right there. What are you talking about? Like, she's such a brilliantly written character, and I'm very nervous to see what they do with her the live action.
I'm sure you've seen the internet jokes that are like, Avatar producers have said that Toph will no longer be blind. And I'm like, you joke, but like, that's some shit they do. Like,
I'm kind of scared that they're going to like do something crazy with her character. Like, I would not be surprised. So yeah, like, those jokes are way a little too real.
Well, and I think the thing that would do, like, the thing that would be missing from that isn't necessarily just representation. It's the reason she's such a good earthbender is because she's blind. She can't see. She can only feel the earth under her. That's why when they were like in that wagon or whatever, and she didn't have the earth under her, she had a harder time bending and she didn't feel connected and she felt kind of helpless because she didn't have the connection to the earth that she normally has. Like, that shit's important.
Yeah. And I don't think the showrunners get that. Like, it's like you said, like, they watched the show, but they didn't get it fully. And I feel like those are those moments that they're not going to get. And, like, going back to, like, Katara and Toph, I think one of my favorite things is that they're, like, bonded and fought at the same time. Because it's, like, it's such an honest look into female friendship. Because it's, like, I think a true female friendship has its fights, has its, like, problems. Like, I have this conversation with my, like, adult female friends all the time. That, like, if we're not arguing a bit, then what are we doing? Like, then we're not getting better. Like, we need to have opposite sides to grow and understand each other. And, like, Toph and Katara's back and forth, but also ultimate understanding to need to bond to, like, stick together is, like, so beautiful in this very, like, masculine, like, world of Aang and, like, Sokka and Zuko. So, but, like, they didn't show that part of Katara. So, like, how are they going to... They're going to have a lot to, like, catch up on in season two if they're trying to do it all.
Yeah. Well, I also feel like a lot of times as women, we're normally put into two camps. We're either girly or we're tomboys. And I think... that what the show did so well was obviously Toph was the tomboy and Katara was the girlier girl. And they do poke some fun at each other in that vein. But then we go to the Fire Nation, we all have to dress up, and Toph very much softens and becomes more feminine. And Katara learns to be stronger or more masculine through Toph's influence. Mm-hmm. And the show does a really good job of showing that we are not one or the other. Like, we might like things or have interests or have a specific energy that leans one way or the other, but everyone has, we are all well-rounded human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And the show does a really good job of using Toph and Katara to show that through their character growth.
And the best thing about that too, is they do it without making it like male, like through the male gaze, because a lot of these like type of like, not stereotypes, but these types of women characters is through the like idea of like, oh, well, this is how I get paid. It's like a pick me mentality. Like, if I'm a tomboy, the guys are going to like it. Or if I'm really girly, the guys are going to like it. But Katara is really not to get Aang's or Zuko or its attention. Toph is not one of the boys to get any of their attentions. They're literally just that way. That's just who they are. And that's why I really love that moment of Ba Sing Se whenever they had like little bonding spa moment. But like, even though like Toph is like not into it, they like still end up like having fun with it. Like, I think they do, I forget what she does, but she does something with like the coal or the mud, and like Katara giggles. It's just, it's very cute. And then they have that bonding moment with the girls, where just like the girls in the village are like, oh, you're not very good looking. And like, it hurts Toph, and Katara being like, you're really beautiful. And like, Toph is like, I didn't need you to say that, but thank you. And she's like, I don't know what you look like, but I've heard, like, I bet you are too. It just like, I don't, it just shows that even if they have different personalities, like, they can find like an in-between. And it's just so unheard of to find two females like that, so well written. And like, yes, it's a kid's show, but like, we should take notes, because that's how it's done.
Absolutely. And I talked about this a little bit when I was watching House of the Dragon, because that show wildly does not understand how female friendships work at all. Mm-hmm. The other thing that this show does really well is not just how female friendships work, but how women interact in general. Sometimes when certain men write women relationships, it's very catty.
Yeah.
And they're like, they're fighting over the same boy, or we hate each other because the other one thinks they're pretty, or what. It's insulting and reductive, but the show does a really good job of like, we are all on this quest together. This affects everybody. Even our little interpersonal squabbles, they're never about a boy, or they're never about something petty or stupid. It's just like the best way to handle this big giant life or death situation that we're all in. It's something Avatar does really well in general. Like, they don't shy away from the fact actual genocides are happening on this kid's show.
Like, they have the bigger picture in mind. I just, it's very much like how kids would have to adjust to people. Like, it kind of reminds me of, like, whenever you move to college and you finally have, like, roommates that aren't your siblings or something, and you have to, like, learn to be in someone else's personal space, and what that's like. It just kind of reminded me of that. Like, whenever Toph is on their first adventure, and she's like, no, I hold my own, and Katara's like, well, we help everyone. Like, that's really just like, okay, we're roommates, we should do dishes together, and the one's like, well, no, I'll just do my dishes. And she's like, why can't we do it together? It just kind of reminded me of, like, that kind of, like, simple, like, dynamic of talking of, like, how are we going to build a home together?
Then we have Azula, May, and Ty Lee, who are the bad guys, but, like, they're also teenagers. Like, yeah, Azula goes batshit crazy, the girl's nuts, but, like, May and Ty Lee, they just kind of got pulled into this, and it's very obvious that they want to be loyal to their friend and to their nation, but they don't really understand the weight of what's happening.
And I would argue that, like, May and Ty Lee, I always feel like it's a friendship of convenience for them. Like, I think, like, Ty Lee is low-key always been afraid of Azula. And I think that that's also a very good female dynamic of, like, protection and fear and, like, recognizing that, like, okay, this girl is kind of nuts. Like, I need to be on her good side until, like, absolutely, I can kind of escape. So, and it's such a different type of dynamic compared to, like, Katara and Alpha. Like, even though they probably aren't friendly or aren't even considered, they wouldn't probably consider each other friends in the beginning, but then they become family. But, like, May, Ty Lee, and Azula are technically friends, but then they betray Azula, and Azula, like, thought they were her friends, but, like, maybe May and Ty Lee were just like, no, we were just scared of you, you're kind of a bully, like, and it's just, I don't know, it's just a dynamic of female, like, not politics, but, like, how females operate within each other, even.
Oh, it's very high school. Like, my favorite comparison is when my senior year, I didn't really have friends. We just had a couple of people that, like, we could tolerate being around each other. And we're like, look, none of us are graduating alone, so let's just get to the end of this year together. And then we're all going off to college anyway. Like, that's kind of that dynamic, is it's a survival technique, not necessarily a real friendship. Mm-hmm. Like, I have not talked to a single one of those people since high school. But
no, but that's very much it. And, like, there's, like, a Stockholm syndrome with that. Like, some people are like, no, we were besties. Because I've definitely had that with, like, my med school friends. I've definitely done a video about this, how, like, the Fire Nation reminds me of friends that you, like, they're, like, low-key toxic. And they, like, make you upset, but you don't understand why. But, like, and then, but, like, people that, like, you don't have anything in common, but they're good people. Like, you want to be friends with them. You'll be outside of your comfort zone with them. Because, like that's a friendship worth getting to know versus, like, people that are just there, like, they've just been part of your circle, or they're, like, close hometown friends. They're, like, you've grown up with them, you have to tolerate them, but they don't bring out the best of you all the time. And, like, Zuko is definitely, like, the epitome of that. Like, he's so sassy, and, like he has so much, like, emo teenage angst. And it's just, like, yeah, because, like, you're with your home, like, townies, you're with your home friends, you, like, went back to, like, your home high school, and you're hanging out with your ex, the girl that you, like, your high school sweetheart, and you're recognizing, like, you outgrew her, basically. So, but
yeah, exactly.
Azula's, to me, a very fascinating character too, and I definitely feel a lot of feelings about her in the live action. But I think Azula is just such a well done character as well, with as far as strong female characters.
Oh, I love it, because, and this is something I've said about things like Jane Austen a lot, is I love the way Jane Austen writes female characters, because they're all different. It shows that in media too often, women are stuck in stereotypes. Like, this is a woman character, she is hot. This is another woman character, she is a nerd. And they're never any more than whatever archetype they're put in. Mm-hmm. But Jane Austen does a really good job of all of the characters are fully rounded, fully fleshed out human beings that happen to be women. And I feel like Avatar does that really, really well too. Like, Azula is crazy, but she's clearly crazy because she was driven mad under the pressure of being a tyrant's daughter. Like, this wasn't an accident. She was literally engineered to be insane.
She was a weapon. Like, he made her a weapon. So, like, a teenage girl becoming a weapon, like, what do you expect? And then her mom abandons her. Like, my two thing, favorite things about Azula is that, like, because we're going back to Game of Thrones, that she gives that Game of Thrones vibe of, like, nonsensical evil. Because of her, like, her comment, like, my mom thought I was crazy. She was right. But at the same time, she has so much heart because, like, she's also just putting up a front that, like, she is hurt. And yeah. I love the nuances of it. Like, they don't, and really what I really like about Azula, what I don't necessarily appreciate about the live action, is that they didn't expect her to be anything more. Like, she was just allowed to be crazy. She's allowed to be the tyrant's daughter, mm-hmm. the weapon. She's allowed to hunt her brother. Her Uncle Iroh is even like, no, we're not going to try to, like, reason with Azula. She's unreasonable.
Right.
And then we as an audience are allowed to see the layers of this character that, like, well, she's also banned by her mother. Her father is a terrible person. Her two best friends just betrayed her. And that, like, devastation of her two friends, like, betraying her and how that sent her spiraling. Like, I'm like, that's good female writing. Because, like, when you're two friends that you think are loyal, like, for me personally, the worst breakups for me are, like, my friendships, like, whenever I fight with my girlfriends. And I was just absolutely. Like, yeah, I get it, Azula. Like, yeah, like, you start to question yourself because of it. And it just, to have that in the finale, too, for her character, oh, chef, this is why Avatar's a masterpiece of a show. It's like these choices, oh.
It is. It's so good. And my thing is, and I see people talk about this on the internet a lot, is just let evil characters be evil. We don't need a justification for everything. Why does everyone need a redemption arc? Some people in real life are just bad people. You need to be okay with that. And if we can't see it in fiction, then you get people trying to empathize with, like, murderers and rapists. They're like, but they had a hard childhood. I don't care. Like.
And it's like, I get the point of that because it's like, okay, yeah, you want to show that hurt people because, like, where does, like, this, like, motivation come from? But we as, like, an audience have not been able to process it well. Like, I think I've noticed it, especially with, like, Stranger Things. I think everyone, like, misunderstands the point of showing these backstories. And it's like, no, that's not, right. It's not to, like, humanize them. It's just to be like, that is why they are this way, but they're still a bad person. And, like, I think Azula I think that's why it was so refreshing to see Azula. Like, yeah, yeah, like, she has problems with her family, but she's still a crazy girl. And, like, I just love that they leaned into it, especially for a woman.
And I think at that point, we had seen just how much Zuko had gone through. So you see them go through, like, these parallel paths. Like, they both went through trauma. It's how you decide to respond to trauma. She went nuts. Zuko had a brilliantly written redemption arc. Like, mm-hmm. not everyone gets redeemed because not everyone chooses to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really important writing device.
And it's so good that they did that with, like, a brother-sister relationship because, like, one of my favorite videos, I mean, you can, like, analyze, like, Avatar in such a different way, but one of the fun ones is, like, comparing the parallels of, like, Aang to Zuko, but, like, also Sokka and Katara to Azula and Zuko, because they're Zuko, also kind of, like, the same type of dynamic, but, like, it's so different because their parental units are, like, they both had a mother that they lost at a childhood. They both have fathers that kind of abandoned them. They both had to self-parent. One of them feels like a sense of responsibility. The other one is, like, a skillful bender and, like, it's considered a prodigy. So it's just, it's so crazy how, like, when you see these choices as kids and how they can, like, lead, like, it's just, like, parenting can only go so far. Backstory can only go so far. It is, at the end of the day, a character and their choices and just, this is why the female characters are so amazing, because it's like they all have these parallels, but in a way that make them different, but at the same time, like, humanizes them and recognizable. It's just so good.
Right. Yeah. And so I just have to throw this in here before we move on to Korra, because Korra is in the Avatar The Last Airbender universe.
Yeah.
My biggest pet peeve when people start talking about, like, media or whatever on the internet and you throw out a take that someone doesn't agree with and they're like, relax, it's a TV show, it's not that deep. Yeah. It's literally always that deep. It's always that deep. Art is there for us to relate to and for us to analyze. If it wasn't that deep, art wouldn't exist, period. Like, no artist spends hours of their life writing, producing, creating something for people not to talk and relate to it. Like, it's meant to be dissected. Like, they have something to say. That is the purpose of all art. And our society would crumble without it. It is literally always that deep.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's such a, I think it's one of the ignorant, most ignorant comments ever. Because I'm like, you're telling me that these people, this Billy, like millions of dollars probably went into this. All the people that are in the production, all the writing, it's not that deep. They didn't spend like at least maybe 2-3 years of their lives doing all this for it to not be that deep. It's just, I don't know. I really feel like it's just when people deflect and like, oh, they didn't get it or they don't want to see it in that like new scope. And they're just like, it's not that deep. And it's like, no, you just right. don't want to like be challenged a bit.
Yeah, I get it a lot when, honestly, when I just get really passionate about talking about a character, they're like, chill, it's a TV show. I'm like, okay. The TV shows you watch and the TV shows you're interested in fully tell me who you are as a person. Like that's, we're all shaped by the media we watch. Like my sense of humor is the way that it is because I watched Avatar growing up. So.
And like, I love Avatar's humor. Like as an adult, I was like, oh, it's going to be like kids jokes, but it's so funny. It's like the jokes that they make. I don't even know how to explain it, but it's just silly. And like Korra definitely does it sillier, but I don't know. I really appreciated it. Before we move to Korra, I wanted to ask, what did you think of the live action Azula?
I think the actress is amazing. I'm so glad they casted her. I love her. She's adorable. I think they chose to introduce her earlier than they did in the cartoon. And I kind of understand where that was coming from. But they don't pay it off at all during the first season. So it was like, here's three other people that are also in this show and important to this story. And then we don't see them again, really. And we're not going to until seasons 2 and 3. So I just didn't really think it was necessary. Like, right now there's no, and again, back to the director didn't let her act. Like, there was no crazy, there was no anger, there was no madness in her. Everything she did was just very flat. And had we seen more of her, and that could be explained by her being an actual psychopath with no emotions, then sure, fine. But we didn't see enough of her for that to be the justification. It was just too soon.
I feel like, exactly. Like, I feel like it wasn't her, because like the cast is great. Like, the casting of Mei, Ty Lee, and Azula, I believe, is fine. I just feel like it was unnecessary. Like, I think that they try to rush her and add her, and like, I almost feel like it did her an injustice and disservice, and that's why there's been so much backlash. I mean, the backlash is very, like, disgusting, the way people are acting towards this child, but, like, I also just feel like it wasn't fair to her. Like, they shouldn't have introduced her so soon, and it was just like, kind of sad for her. I was just, like, really, I think one of the best things about Azula is that she's introduced later, and, like, I've had this argument, that's what I wanted to ask you, because I've had this argument for so many people that are like, why wouldn't they introduce Azula, though? Like, why does it matter? And I'm like, because, like, that's, like, Azula's charm. It's like, we don't know who this character is, and then we see her in season two, and we're like, oh, my God, this character is ridiculous. Like, where has she been? So I almost feel like they did a disservice to her because of it.
Well, they did a disservice to her and to Zuko and to the story because they just, again, they didn't understand why the cartoon did what it did. Like, the pacing and the introductions and when the storylines happened were all there for very specific reasons. And by introducing Azula so soon, what it does is it takes away any tension or suspense or fear from Zuko to confront his sister. Like, all of that is just, like, gone because there's no buildup to it.
Yeah, and, like, Azula's a big bad, essentially, and not a big bad, but, like, she's the villain, I would say, in season two, whereas, like, Zhao is the villain in season one, so, like, it was just, like, I don't know, this is what I meant, like, with the choices of, like, okay, you had 16 hours, you had so much to do in season one, but then you added so much of season two and three, like, what is season two even going to do? Like, I am very curious, I'm, like, more curious than I am excited to see what season two does with the live adaptation.
I don't want to watch season two and three for reasons of I know it's going to be terrible, but also I feel like for journalistic integrity, if I'm going to continue shitting on the show, which I am, I'm going to have to watch it so that I can cite specific sources for why it's bad. That's why I made myself sit through Madam Web. I've sat through lots of bad things just so I can be specific for why this thing is bad. Korra is also part of the Avatar world, but she's treated very differently by the fandom.
Yes. Very well said.
Why do we think that is?
I wonder why. I am a Korra stan till I die. Like, I love that girl. Like, I And I walked into like Legend of Korra not knowing if I would like it because I was just like so excited about Avatar. But like, how do you not love Korra at the end of it? Like, you cannot not love her. She's adorable. Literally the cute, like her introduction scene, I'm just like, the girl with the little pant leg up and her little belly show, like you're mad at her. And like literally so many people I'm sure you guys have seen my videos about how much I've defended Korra, and like people are just so ridiculous. They're like, why can't she bend everything? And like, it's literally a 5 second moment and like we move on. Like, it's a plot device, get over it.
The biggest complaint I've heard, and we all know it's BS, but the biggest complaint I've heard was that it took Aang like so long to master the elements. Like, even by the end of the show, some people will acknowledge that he was not a master of fire or earth by the time the finale hit, but that Korra picked it up too fast. And what irritates me about that is that Korra knew she was the Avatar way earlier than Aang did. Aang was 12 and was only told because this war was coming. Like, the first episode, we see Korra bending as, like, a little infant toddler. Like, she knew immediately. So, obviously, she was going to have more time and more training. But we also saw her fail at airbending over and over and over and over again because she couldn't control her emotions.
Yeah. And, like, it just... So... And then she lost all the bending to get airbending. Like, I think people forget all the, like, stuff in between all of that, too. It's also, like, so not important to her storyline. I think that's what gets me. And just, like, her being a good bender doesn't make a difference into her being accepted as an Avatar, though. Like, it was really not crucial for... Yeah, like, it was really crucial for Aang to learn everything because he doesn't have masters. He's been gone for 100 years. He has to fight a war. But like Korra doesn't... Like, it doesn't matter that she can bend everything else. It matters that she can't bend... She can't airbend. She can't connect to her past lives. She has no spiritual connection. No one accepts her as the Avatar. She's not socialized at all to humans because she's been like isolated and in training as the Avatar since she was a child. She has no identity. It's like none of that, like it didn't matter. And everyone's like so fixated on the thing. I'm like, you missed the point of her character if that's what you're worried about. I just feel like people just didn't want to understand her because she was just confident and like just because a woman is confident is essentially why they were like, oh, she's a Mary Sue.
They hate it. That's it. That's my biggest pet peeve because no one actually knows what that term means. I did a whole article about it because I kept hearing people call Korra and Rey and
Katara,
friggin' Carol Danvers, Mary Sue's. I was like, you don't know what that means.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, it's a made-up term used in a Star Trek fan fiction to make a point. Like my dad used it one time. He's like, because we were talking about Star Wars, and he's like, well, Rey is a Mary Sue. I go, if you can tell me what the definition of a Mary Sue is, then you would also have to accept that Luke is a Mary Sue. What are you talking
about? That's the thing that gets me. It's just like, if anything, I actually made the video, but I never posted it. But like, Aang would be considered a Gary Sue then too, if you want to say it. Luke would be. So would Anakin Skywalker. In general, the term needs to be retired because like no one uses it correctly anyway. And like, I don't know. For me, like Bella Swan is like a good example, but no one brings up Bella Swan because no one thinks of it in like that sense.
But you're right.
Yeah.
That's a perfect character to bring up because her character is literally just an archetype of another character that is just shallowly, badly written. That is the perfect character example to use.
And that's fine. Like that's it. Like, that's what it's supposed to be. But everyone's, like, putting it into, like, sci-fi and, like, it's action and fantasy worlds. And it's like, now you've lost the point. Like, you've lost the plot of the term.
Yeah.
It's just misogyny now. Like,
I've been thinking about just putting, like, a terms and definitions page up on my website that's just like, this is what fridging is, this is what a Mary Sue is, this is...
It's so funny because Google is free. You could literally Google it. It's like there's like literally a site for these things, but I'm like, since no one else is looking it up, you might as well just put it up too, like, because clearly no one uses Google apparently, right? At least on social media. Yeah.
Well, the people arguing these things can't read, so I guess it wouldn't matter if they did anyway, but the biggest thing with Korra is the relationship, the way she navigates relationships in her show. Like, obviously it's still an ensemble cast the way Avatar was, in a sense, but I feel like Avatar focused more equitably around the whole group, whereas Korra is very much Korra's story and how other people fit into it. And I loved that because I'm like, oh, this is a proper like Avatar story. Like we're just seeing the story of a different Avatar, and she doesn't have the same intensity and support system as Aang did because she's not in the middle of a war. Like this is post Fire Nation. Like the world has changed, and therefore the way the Avatar operates in the world is going to change. And I think that's something the fans fail to understand also.
Oh yeah. Because like it's very much like you said in the beginning, like Avatar is a masterpiece. It's one of the best written shows like of our time. Like I'm saying that as a person that watched it as an adult. But like Avatar is great because of like the themes of genocide and the fact that there's like the Zuko redemption arc at the same time. And it's also like talking about like, and then it has all these wonderful characters. Like there are many reasons why Avatar is as good as it is. And it's really hard to compare anything to it. But like, but this is why I think the whole argument of like people like, oh, judge the live action as its own identity. But it's like, well, you didn't do that for Korra. So like, why would you do that for the live action?
Yeah.
When Korra's literally just meant to be an Avatar story. And it's, I don't know, the fan base gets so frustrating outside of the projects. Like Avatar, The Last Airbender, they have, there's definitely like arguments of like, the shipping is annoying, but like then when you get outside the projects, that's when like the fan base gets so like irritating to have a conversation with.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And here's the thing. You don't want me to judge the live action as its own entity because that's its own entity. It was a rushed, plot-driven, very hollow piece of messy garbage. As an adaptation, the beat for beats were not bad. They included most of the things they needed to include in season one. My ranking as an adaptation is a lot higher than my ranking as an individual entity. So you don't want me, you don't want me to judge it as its own thing, because as its own thing, it's very bad.
I think as an adaptation that helped.
My husband hates Legend of Korra, but not because of her. He doesn't like the massive jump in like the way the world has changed. All of this lore or whatever gets filled in off screen, and that really bugs him. And I get that. That's fine. And then he also hates the fandom. He's like, I feel like the fans do a lot of writing for the show, like to fill in all the blanks and stuff. And I was like, yeah, I get that. Mm-hmm. But like, can't you just set that aside? He's like, no, I need an in-between movie. I need to know how we got from point A to point B. He's too much of like an engineer brain. And I was like, I loved Korra the minute I saw her. He was, yeah, it's because you're bisexual. I'm like, not wrong, buddy.
To be fair, everyone, okay, also that's the thing, The Legend of Korra, everyone's really attractive. There's like no way that like you're not watching that and recognizing how everyone, like Lin is a very good looking character. General Iroh, Kuvira, like everyone is so good looking that like Asami.
Yeah.
Like,
It's definitely one of the shows where I was like, yeah, definitely bisexual. Okay. Because the energy also, like, I don't know how to explain bisexual energy, but Korra's got it. And I think that's one of the reasons I connected 100%. With her so well. Okay, thank you. I'm not crazy.
No. And I think, I don't know if they leaned into it in the beginning, like, because of the whole, like, Korra Sami thing. And I'm just like, I think the Mako of it all, unfortunately, it's like my only thing that's what slowed me down in the beginning was the love triangle, because I felt like it was so forced a bit. Not the relationship, it's like, and not like the platonic relationship between Mako and Korra, or like the romantic relationship between Korra and Asami, but like this in between of like they had to be fighting over Mako. I feel like that was just like what made it kind of awkward. And I don't know, that's just like one of the beats where I'm just like, yeah, I get that people are upset with the lore. I'm just upset that they did that. Like, they didn't need to add that part.
Totally fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think a lot of what gets Korra treated differently by the fandom is definitely that she is a female Avatar, which is super annoying because theoretically we're getting a Kyoshi movie, which I've wanted forever. So I just hope people are fair to that movie. I'm so excited. See, that's the one thing I liked about the live action is I got to see I got to see Kiyoshi and I love her. I was like, wait, actually just give me 8 episodes of this. That's fine.
Well, yeah, see, episode 2 was great for that reason, because, like, it added something that this, like, anime didn't do, but in a way that, like, still fit, in a way that added to the story. Like, season, like, episode 2 was so good, but then the rest happened.
Yeah, I think that's also what the live action's problem was. It was so inconsistent. Like, it had really good moments immediately followed by something super terrible, and you're like, why? Who wrote this? Like, it just felt wildly bad.
I don't think it was
watching it gave me whiplash.
Yeah. Well, I think there was a lot of production issues that they're like hiding, and you can tell by the writing that, like, because it's so inconsistent.
Oh, absolutely. Because the timeline for that was so inconsistent. Like, it was supposed to be done like a year and a half ago, and it wasn't. And then they released things, and it was. I don't know. I also think they blew their production budget on some random things, and we didn't get enough Appa either, so I was a little upset about that.
Possible, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's very possible, yeah.
Yeah, the live action is just not a very good representation of how good this story is.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll talk about it when season 2 and 3 come out.
I'm very nervous for what they're going to do with her.
Yeah, I am too. We'll see. Yeah. Maybe they will take the internet's bullying and make it better. We have seen it happen before. So
that is so true.
Maybe we all just need to bully the studios into leaving Toph alone.
I think they might, because like they did that with Bridgerton. There was always like a glow up for every like Bridgerton like season, right? So it's like maybe they will with the extra like budget. Because they did do well with numbers, so I'm sure they like have more money now. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll see.
Yeah.
I'm more excited about the animated in between movies for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because they announced, so at San Diego Comic-Con, I want to say 2 years ago now, they announced 3 movies. We know one of them is going to be the grown-up gang. Mm-hmm. It was rumored that the other one was going to be Kiyoshi, because the announcement was the voice actor for Koro reading a Kiyoshi comic announcing these movies. So people were kind of like speculating the hell out of what that meant. I don't remember if the Kiyoshi one was actually confirmed or not, but I know there has been some changes around the production of those. But the gang one is coming first, and they are in development. Voice actors are hired and all of that. So,
yeah, I saw the announcement soon. For that. Isn't there a Roku one coming too? I believe, or did I make that up? Or maybe it's a comic book or a book.
I don't know if that one was confirmed. That might just be speculation again. But there are supposed to be ones of the previous Avatars. Was what the original announcement had said.
Mm-hmm.
With the original writers and everything. Now, I know we're not getting the original voice actors back, because the original voice actor for Aang doesn't even act anymore. And the original voice actor for Katara was asked, but she turned it down. So,
May's
I don't know.
So
hopefully they get them to sound real similar, though, because too many of us have it embedded in our hearts that if they like change too drastically, we're going to be like, that's not Katara.
And like Katara's voice is something that we like know so well too, so I really kind of, I mean, she's so busy, so it makes sense, but like it would have been so awesome if they could have gotten her back.
It's okay, I'm sure they're gonna be great. I have more faith in the animated movies than I do in the live action adaptations, so I'm willing to just wait and reserve judgment until that happens.
Same.
Well, thanks for talking with me, Maria. I'm glad we got to do this. I'm so glad you finally watched Avatar, because it's one of the best things ever.
Me too. My life has like forever changed because I watched it. So thank you for having me. I could talk about, I don't know, I could talk with the girls in Avatar all day, and I could talk about anything about Avatar all day. So thank you for having me to talk about it some more.
Thank you so much. Yeah.